Greetings, everybody, and welcome to the Halloween episode of Pod Stallions. I'm Brian, and as always, next to me is Jason.
Oh,
you just got to outdo me.
Sorry.
I should have done a spooky voice.
I was going to count Floyd and make it like raspy and cough at the end, but
that would have been funny.
But hey, everybody.
Got that joke. we've got a topic today that I didn't have to study for. It is very fitting, and I'll let Jason explain why we've chosen Frankenstein as our subject.
It's pronounced Frankenstein, actually. Yes, we are, and let's just get this out of the way first and foremost. For the purposes of this show, for the rest of the episode probably, we're going to be calling the creature Frankenstein. Frankenstein's monster, you know, Dr. Frankenstein's creation, whatever. His adopted kid, his trust fund kid. We all know that he's called the creature, the monster, Frankenstein's monster, whatever you want to call him. But for the purposes of the show, to keep it brief, we'll just call him Frankenstein. Is that okay? Can we agree to just call him Frankenstein?
I also like to refer to blood-sucking people as Draculas.
Well, I always whenever I see somebody with big, you know, like clodhopper boots, like especially of the female persuasion, like sort of a big cork kind of heel or boot, I always go, oh, what's with the Frankensteins, man?
Let's just start by saying that this character has completely permeated pop culture to the point where I have a big Frankenstein statue, and I will see on Halloween, not every day of the week, but and I will see 3- and 4-year-old kids going, "Arr!" So
I'm glad you clarified that for the purpose of, you know, the season and, you know, the cops.
I'm well on my way to becoming a kook, but I'm not there yet.
Well, speaking of kooks, and the reason we thought we would do this was a number of reasons. But first of all, it's Halloween, and who better to celebrate? Because I think Brian and I are probably in agreement. You know, all the creatures and characters and monsters and horror stuff we love, that Frankie is probably top of the list.
Absolutely.
As iconic. But secondly, this past summer, summer of 1816, I think June or July of 1816, is the, as legend has it, is that weekend, that lost, you know, drug-addled weekend where, you know, Byron and Shelley and Mary Shelley, who I think was then Wollstonecraft, had that sort of bet about coming up with, you know, supernatural or, you know, kind of spooky kind of stories. And she sort of dreamt up the story of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
So this really, this Halloween,
the modern Prometheus
is Frankenstein's monster's 200th birthday.
Right.
So, you know, what do you get? What do you get the creature that, you know, pretty much has everything? We thought, well, we'll give him a little birthday episode and that we'll talk about all the millions of things we love associated with the creature. So that is where this sort of this idea sort of came from. And from there, I will let my esteemed colleague, Mr. Hyler, take it away.
Huh? Oh,
you still there? You awake?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was. I did prattle on. I'm sorry.
I was pretending I wasn't paying attention like every day of high school. this character is. I personally don't know why. Well, I have some theories as to why I like Frankenstein. One, I grew up with a dad who was 6'4" and stomped around and had giant feet. So I think the monster kind of reminded me of my pop a little bit.
That's cool.
Yeah, and a big square head too. But
and bolts coming out of his neck.
No bolts yet. I can't remember my exact first experience with the character. It may have been Hilarious House of Frightenstein. There was a Frankenstein in that show that never moved called Brucey. Mm-hmm. And you'd watch it hoping Brucey would move. I think he spoke in one episode, but that's it. He's basically a Don Post Frankenstein mask on a mannequin.
Okay.
In the background of like all the sketches. But what was your first... do you remember your first... real experience with Frankenstein?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, it's hard to talk about Frankenstein's monster, Frankenstein. Eventually, we'll just call him Frankenstein, like I said. But it's kind of hard to talk about Frankenstein without acknowledging or talking about the genius of Jack Pierce, who was the main makeup artist for, you know, the Wolfman, Frankenstein. He did The Man Who Laughs with Conrad Veidt, which sort of gave inspiration to Bob Kane and Bill Finger to make the Joker. He did Bride of Frankenstein, etc. And really, you know, before the Universal film with Karloff, we had different versions in print and in art, and we had the Edison-produced silent one.
We should, you know, the book is very open to interpretation as to what the creature actually looks like.
Absolutely. And so when you – so it's ironic, though. It's, I mean, not ironic, but interesting that Pierce comes into it and thinks, well, you know, it's a cadaver. He's going to be put together, and, you know, the head's going to be, you know, they cut off part of another head to get to this, and a mishmash, the bolts, all that stuff, as far as I know, kind of came from Pierce. And then, of course, the genius of Karloff taking out the false, you know, bit of the jaw that he had for the gut blown off or whatever, and leaving that sunken in spot side on the side of his face, all that collaboration really then became the blueprint, the gold standard. So much of what Pierce did for all of these creatures, the Universal monsters especially, came because, you know, the Creature from the Black Lagoon is a different thing. It's a one off. There have been a million, you know, Frankenstein interpretations and, you know, Wolfman interpretations, etc. They all kind of come back to start with Pierce's work. So having said that, I think what happened was it would, the Abbott and Costello stuff was always kind of in the house when those things would come on. Or, you know, I've talked about this years ago. We used to go to a resort in Minnesota called Breezy Point Resort.
Yeah.
I remember bits of it. I remember a little bit what the layout was. And I think even Nick the lounge singer, Bill Murray's character from the early SNL episode, every now and then he'd go like, "We're up here at Breezy Point Resort. And, you know, how's everybody doing?" You know, so it was kind of a Midwestern thing. And I think Frank and Ed Davis helped create that Nick the lounge singer character and that stuff. And they're from Minnesota. Davis has passed away now. But anyway, they would do, you know, little film festivals up there that the whole family could kind of go to. And I think that was one of the first times I saw the Abbott and Costello monster ones. I don't know why they showed a couple of those. That might have been the first story. I mean, I knew who the character was from Halloween, but I didn't really know the history of it or how it, you know, exactly what it was and, you know, sort of where it came from. And I think from there came the original film. Like, there was some – my dad used to always take me to – sort of, you know, not film festivals, but, you know, back when, well, they still have them, but those times where, you know, a theater, a local theater will go, it's Monster Month or whatever, and then every night it's a different movie or revival sort of houses now. And so he took me to, there was like a monster thing, and he started taking me to these monster movies. He did it for Bogart. That's how it turned me on to Bogart and the Thin Man films and, you know, War of the Worlds and Forbidden Planet, stuff like that. He took me to these revival sort of theaters. And that, I think, was the first time I ever saw the actual film. And then right on its heels would have been the re-release of Young Frankenstein, which I know we'll get to. Yeah. But I think it was re-released in like 78 or something. And going to see that in a theater, you know, everything started to kind of click and come together.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Interesting. I think my first Frankenstein film was Hammer's Evil of Frankenstein.
No way!
Which was played on Christmas Day. I've said this before. My sister and I, you know, we're waiting for family to arrive, and there's this. And I vividly remember the movie. I mean, we must have been able to watch the whole thing waiting for family to arrive. And it just, I remember even as a kid thinking, is somebody drunk at the TV station? I grew up thinking that was Universal because Kiwi Kingston's character was licensed by Universal.
So Kiwi Kingston's character?
Kiwi Kingston's creature.
Oh, okay, okay.
It was licensed by Universal, so it's not a great... It's nowhere near Jack Pierce, but it's a flat-topped monster. So it does look like a, for all, you know, intensive purposes, a Universal Frankenstein.
Isn't that funny, though? I think you've said this before on the show. Your exposure to Hammer, I think they were, because they ran, I didn't really know what Hammer was.
No, me either. And honestly, until I was about 20, I kept going, which Universal Frankenstein has the guy with the violin? And friends would go, I don't know.
It seems like you got a good run of Hammer on TV in Canada, right? They played Hammer quite a bit.
I watched a lot of Hammer. More or less when I turned about 13.
Okay.
Because, you know.
And then you met Ingrid Pitt.
I did meet Ingrid Pitt, yes. And Barbara Steele.
Oh, please tell that story.
I told you the other day. We were at a restaurant. It was around the time of a horror con in New Jersey, but we were just eating at a restaurant, my wife and I. And I held the door open for two very nice-looking older ladies. And then I was walked back to, you know, we walked to our table and my wife went, that's Barbara Steele. And that's Ingrid Pitt. And they were with their husbands and they were having dinner together. And I just thought that was really neat.
It's just what this story does is just make me admire and love your wife even more. The stuff, Battle of the Planets. Yeah. She tells you who those two are.
She recognized them first. Yeah, she said that's Barbara Steele.
And this is why I've always told you to carry that photo of Ingrid Pitt from Warriors of the Deep around with you at all times.
I need her doing the kung fu pose, fighting that monster.
You never know when you're gonna.
That same day, I helped a guy with his luggage, and it turned out to be Tom Christopher Hawk from Buck Rogers. But
legendary birdman.
He was struggling with his luggage, and I give him a hand, and he goes, "Thanks, buddy." And I'm like, "Hey, you know, I let him go."
You know, it'd have been great if you'd had a little exchange where you could say, "What are you doing here?" He said, "Oh, I just flew in for the show," you know.
No. Oh.
You get it?
Yes.
I'll try again.
Let's let that go.
Take two.
Yeah. I can go on. I have little funny moments like that.
How the hell did we get to Hawk from Buck Rogers? We're 10 minutes into Frankenstein.
12 minutes and 50 seconds.
My fault. The show's out of control already.
Yeah. I'm sure we could 6 degrees it back, but why don't we just... Stop.
We could.
The other film that I remember very vividly as a kid is Son of Frankenstein, and that's because of Lugosi's Igor performance creeped me out as a kid. The fact that he had been hung.
Right.
And
right.
It's ironic that Lugosi is Igor when he actually is the guy who turned down the role famously. Because
when I was at this horror convention thing, whenever that was, February, whatever it was, I spoke with Bela Lugosi Jr.
Yeah.
and his daughter, and there is some myth to that. It was, I don't know if it's flat out that he turned it down or how it worked. There are some sort of
it was a different, like they wanted to dress him like the Golem.
Mm-hmm.
Like it wasn't quite that was the it. Same makeup.
That and was it, yeah.
I think that may have had a lot to do with it. And maybe it was the character was mute and that just bothered him, but it made sense in his career that maybe he wanted to turn that down.
But we should specify something here because I think you and I, again, are probably in agreement that there's something far more attractive about Frankenstein. I'd say Frankenstein, the Wolfman creature, you know, like the rest of them are all, you know, brilliant. But those two faces, that makeup job, especially Frankenstein,
yeah.
Then say, you know, Dracula over the years. And I think that's why Frankenstein has been so popular. But basically, I think we can kind of agree, except for specific, you know, different films and different incarnations. For the most part, the likeness of the creature that everybody knows and loves is the Karloff flathead with the, you know, with the...
It's never been topped.
Right.
People get different interpretations of Dracula, I think, over the years.
Right.
And, you know, to a lesser degree, when you say the mummy, people think different things. You know, either they think Karras or Karloff, but...
Lee, or
yeah, but I don't think there's any contenders to the throne than Karloff himself. A lot of people mix up Glenn Strange's version with Karloff, but that's because Glenn Strange seemed to be like the merchandised Frankenstein, you know?
Right, and it's funny, you know, again, when you say, like, never bettered, it's like, well, if you just take it on the page, and again, we'll get to more of these versions of the creature over the years.
Yeah.
There's nothing that, you know, there are different vampires that stick out to me that, like, oh, you know, Reggie, well, what's his name from Salem's Lot?
Reginald, yeah. But that's basically just a take on Nosferatu.
Even Goldman, you know, certain things that Gary Oldman did in that were kind of cool looks.
Yeah.
But Frankenstein, it's kind of like, I can't think of another incarnation that you just go, oh, wow, that's a really – boy, they really nailed that design. It just seems like everything is going to be compared to it.
I'm super fond of Christopher Lee's Curse of Frankenstein look.
Yes, that it would be my second.
But it's nowhere near as iconic. I just think it looks really
scary.
It looks really cool and scary. Yeah,
it's really really scary for the time. I think that is the scariest thing for that period of Hammer is the makeup on him and that. That's really frightening
stuff.
Yeah, no,
that and you know, but his performance is just okay. It's not as good as Karloff's. Whereas I do view him as the superior Dracula.
Christopher Lee.
Yeah, he's my favorite Dracula.
Oh God, yeah. Oh, absolutely. But we should also say that you know, contrary to popular belief, Karloff, it's not like he played him 17 times.
No, three times.
Only played him three times. And that's kind of remarkable to me as well, that he that look was so iconic from that first film. But it's not like he was, Connery or Moore playing Bond, like he came back again and again and again.
Well, yeah, and the stress of it. I think finally just tore it for him too. But I think also they were still A-list films when Karloff was doing them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when he left, it immediately fell onto the B-list.
By the way, his you said Son of or whatever it was?
Son of is the last that, Karloff, yeah.
That's the one where he's wearing the fur vest the cardigan. I love that. That's my favorite
look. Yeah.
That's my favorite look.
That basically is what Young Frankenstein is, too.
Yes,
like
totally.
There's more in Young Frankenstein from Son of Frankenstein than any of the other films.
Now, okay, so we've got the Hammer stuff. We've got the classic stuff. Do you have a favorite of the classic films? Would it be the first film? Would it be...
Well, I actually view Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein as absolute masterpieces.
Absolutely.
But and I love them. But, you know, I'm me... And I also just kind of like popcorn, you know, turn your brain off stuff. And so there isn't one I don't like, but I do kind of like House of Frankenstein a lot because it's kind of dumb and fun and it moves along quickly.
Now, which one? Sorry,
House
which one?
Of Frankenstein, the second to last of the films. It's the monster rally film.
Okay.
So it's Frankenstein, Dracula.
Who's the monster? Who plays the monster?
Glenn Strange. And he's terrible. I'm sorry, people. I don't like
And Strange, but he Strange is the one that's in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So he kind of became he played it the most, didn't he? Didn't
he play the character? Three times.
Oh, three times as well.
Oh,
okay.
Wait.
I thought it was.
Yes, three times. Yeah.
Okay.
The character in succession for Universal, it's Karloff, Chaney, Lugosi, and Strange three times.
But didn't... Oh, the Lugosi one is horrible.
Not his fault, though.
I know. It's just like... It's so just... They should have just gone a different way. But that's interesting. So I remember the first time that I saw something. Like, I didn't really... To me, Young Frankenstein was kind of like me seeing Monty Python and the Holy Grail the first couple of times when I was like 8, when it aired on public television. You know, I knew it was going to be funny. I'm already laughing even as a kid because I loved, you know, the Python stuff so much. But when it came to the fight with the Black Knight, it scared me. I mean,
the gore?
Yeah, that was – I couldn't tell if I should be laughing or what was going on here. And there's a bit of that in Young – because Young Frankenstein is done with such care and such love for the original look of those movies. I didn't quite get the whole Peter Boyle thing. I didn't quite understand why that was so funny, why he looked so goofy with the hair and everything else. But other than that, like the first time – that there was a different interpretation that just I could not get my head around it, because all I was picturing was Karloff's face with that head and the bolts and everything. And the next thing I think I might have seen that was different, or that wasn't the classic sort of look, was the Michael Sarrazin, Jane Seymour, I think it was a TV thing.
Frankenstein, the True Story, is that it? There was two around the same time.
So that had to be like early or mid 70s, maybe.
Yeah, and Tom Baker's in that.
Baker's in it, and James Mason's in it as well, I think.
Yeah, and doesn't he rip Jane Seymour's head off?
Nah. Well, spoilers. Shit.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry, guys, if you haven't seen this 1972. and I think,
well, actually, I had it in my basket today from Amoeba.
Oh, did you pick it up?
Well, I didn't pick it up. I thought I did because,
it's very long,
you know,
right? It was a two-parter. I remember that.
It's two-parter, but this thing was like 3 hours, and it had, you know, unseen footage and all this stuff. But I actually put it accidentally in the pile of not going to get stuff.
Oh, okay.
So it is available on DVD. But I remember
I'm getting mixed up too. There was also a TV version in '73 starring Bo Svenson.
Really?
Yeah. It was for.
He was in the great. He was in the great Waldo Pepper.
It was just ABC's Wide World of Mystery, and it was Frankenstein. And he, you know, he's your typical Frankenstein makeup.
Well, that's the thing. So the Sarrazin one, though, what I could not figure out why this just wasn't working for me, and you know, like the what's the one? Curse of Frank? No, what's the Cushing one where? You know, he makes the – okay, spoilers. The Cushing Hammer one where at the end something bad happens to him.
Oh, he makes him – yeah, that's right. Which one is that? I know one you're talking about.
Is that Curse of – whatever. So, but the guy that plays the creature just looks like a sad kind of skinny dude that, you know, got patched together kind of thing. There's nothing menacing.
There's one where Freddie Jones plays him, the cruel elephant man keeper.
Yes, he was also in Dune. He's Thufir Hawat in Dune.
Yeah, he plays the quote unquote creature in one of the episodes. I think that's Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed.
Okay, so but there's an example of like, you know, sometimes you're getting a guy that's like a big, imposing guy.
Hammer chose to follow Baron Frankenstein, not the creature. So, you know, Baron Frankenstein, the movies are more the adventures of Baron Frankenstein and the experiments. I mean, he creates a gorgeous woman in one of them.
Yes, he does.
And
all the Hammer. But no, but that, okay, so, but even the Hammer one, you know, Christopher Lee was a big, tall, imposing guy that the makeup, of course, you know, helped. But like, whenever I'd see a different version that it was more for the actual drama of it. And it wasn't all the bells and whistles of the creature. It just didn't. It didn't. Okay, like here's an. Okay, so here's a weird example. Here's a weird one. Do you remember The Bride with Sting and Jennifer Beals?
Yes.
Clancy Brown.
Yes.
Like Clancy Brown is a big dude, and that was actually that was actually a really good performance. Not a good movie, but Clancy Brown is.
Clancy Brown and David Rappaport, right?
David Rappaport, yeah.
They were completely written out of all the publicity for that film. I didn't even know there was a creature in that movie till I read it in Starlog magazine.
That's where I read it. It was actually an interview with David Rappaport. I remember the interview because Clancy was having some kind of clashes with the studio or the director or something.
Well,
and
when the publicity came out, it was just Jennifer Beals and Sting. That's all you knew
and
about.
Sting. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, to be fair, David Rappaport didn't have a pop band from the mid-70s to the early 80s. So
We don't if know he did, that.
If he did, maybe he would have gotten on the poster. No, but there's an example of, you know, Clancy Brown. You'd go, oh, yeah, if I was making that, he'd be the guy I would choose to look like a monster and also be a big mofo.
Yeah, they definitely – like Bo Svenson's a big dude.
Yeah.
Randy Quaid has played the monster.
Now, that was a – was that –
it was a TV movie. Yeah.
Yeah, Patrick Bergen.
Patrick Bergen, yeah. And that was Bergen. That was done around the same time as that
the Robin Hood thing?
The Robert De Niro
What was
Kenneth Branagh, and
it's called Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Kenneth Branagh's acting in that is unbelievably bad.
Everything about that film is unbelievably bad.
Yeah.
The crane shots, the steady – like the camera never stops moving. And it's clear that some of the budget went to Branagh to like, you know, go to the gym. So like 80% of the film, he's got his shirt off. And it was so – because I didn't love Coppola's Dracula. I didn't love it. I liked it a lot. But it took me you know, years and multiple viewings to really appreciate just how good it was, because Keanu Reeves drove me insane. Yes. Every time he was on screen, it just made my blood boil. But there's good stuff in
such a wooden performance there.
Oh, beyond. And that's saying something for him, for his, you know, basket of, you know, wooden performances. But when they announced that, I thought, wow, Coppola's executive producing it. This is going to be a real authentic, dark and gritty version, yada, yada. And it was just – I just thought missed opportunity after missed opportunity. John Cleese is in that too.
I was so excited about – he provides the brain.
That's right.
I was so excited about that because I liked the way that Stoker's Dracula went. I thought it was a really interesting take, and it brought the characters back, you know. And, you know, there was books about Dracula on the shelves and magazines.
It was a slightly different take. It was really well done. And
yeah, so and when Frankenstein came out, before it came out, I was dying to see it. And somebody, and I don't know how I got a hold of this, but before it came in theaters, somebody gave me a VHS copy of it.
Like a screener or something, maybe.
Really bad screener. And I watched.
Oh, hey, you got to hold because I knew this was going to happen. Yep. Sorry. The dog next door. So please hold. Hold.
So, yeah, my first exposure to it was this screener. And I watched the screener. I didn't like the plot twist the story took. I couldn't stand Branagh. And, I liked De Niro in a lot of things. I did not like him as the monster.
Well, and didn't he also start as the criminal guy?
Yeah, they showed him as a criminal guy, and then
but he did like a Cockney accent.
Yes, he did,
and it was really bad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, not everybody can do everything.
No,
you know,
De Niro kind of has a little bit of an accent, anyways.
Right,
so it was just kind of on top of it, and it
And was it Helena Bonham Carter?
I think so. I tried to watch it recently, and I might have been four beers in, and it still I couldn't sit through it.
I just found it to be dizzying. Like you couldn't. It started to make me nauseous the way the camera moved around. But I will say this for it: I didn't think we were going to get two for one with that movie. I didn't think they were going to go where they went with the story.
The whole bride thing.
Yes, I didn't want to ruin it for anybody if they didn't haven't seen it.
It is actually in the book. So,
but I mean, it was. I just, you know, the whole thing was pimped as Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, and I didn't think we were going to get anything other than, you know, Frankie Baby in there.
Well, no, but that I think they were looking for things just as they did in Bram Stoker's Dracula that weren't ever in popular. You know, it's a little bit like that. Legend of Tarzan that came out this summer. There are things, I won't spoil it for you, but there are things in that film
mm-hmm.
that I know to be true to the character of Tarzan,
mm-hmm.
and I have pretty much only seen in cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, I think Tarzan is one of those characters that has been very unfairly adapted over the years.
Oh, I couldn't agree more.
I kind of liken Mary Shelley's.
I think we agree that the Filmation Tarzan is probably the best Tarzan depiction there's ever been.
Well, I did like Legend of Tarzan. It got a lot things, a lot of the things right.
It did. No, and the apes were good. Yeah.
Well, have you seen Legend of Tarzan?
Oh no, I'm sorry. I thought you meant Greystoke.
I like it better than Greystoke.
Oh, better than Greystoke. Yeah, okay,
because they don't rush off to England again. Yeah. You know?
Okay, because I'd heard not so great things, but I really wanted to, I want nothing more than for that to work. Because somewhere in my bizarre, you know, dream psyche, I always thought, God, if Tarzan could work again, then maybe we could eventually get more John Carter of Mars.
Yeah, it didn't bomb, but anyway. So
anyway,
I did not like the De Niro, that terrible Frankenstein at all. But there are a lot of, you know, versions of Frankenstein I've enjoyed over the years, and I thought this show would be a fun just to go through the good and the goofy and the
and
absolutely terrible.
Absolutely.
And have a little fun and kick it around. And one of my favorite adaptations, which is king size stupid, is Frankenstein Conquers the World, the Toho adaptation.
Of course it is.
Yeah, because even when I was 9 watching that, it was like, so this guy ate Frankenstein's atomic heart. You know, it just sort of.
It could happen.
Back up.
It could happen.
But that's a huge favorite of mine, and there's very little toy merchandise of that character. It drives me crazy because I would love nothing more than, you know, toys from it to go with my Godzilla collection.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost
that's a good one.
It's like Toho's Condor Man. They just don't want to talk about it or make merchandise from it.
Well, I would go with if we're going to stick to the mod, we can stick to the movie stuff, but I think we need to get some
movies, TV. It's all fair game.
Yeah. Movies, okay. So I'm going to get some, I'm going to go with some levity right away and say,
wait, you're cutting out again.
Mad Monster Party. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. So
hello.
The creature from the Mad Monster Party. Excellent choice. That is a family classic in our house and a yearly tradition.
Oh, you're hold on. Can you hear me? Because you were just dropping out there. Can you hear me?
I wasn't dropping out. I sounded great.
No, you were dropping out. I couldn't hear you. You were all chopped up. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine. So.
Here's what I love the best about Mad Monster Party's monster is that he's married to Phyllis Diller.
Yes.
And if you look at the original 1910 or whatever it was, Edison produced.
Yeah. Okay, I get where you're going.
It looks like Phyllis Diller.
He
ends up marrying her.
What's really great about that movie? What's terrific about that movie is my wife hates the songs, and me and the kids love to torment her with those songs. Like, You're Different or Our Time to Shine.
Kind of brutal.
They're not great. They're not Rudolph quality, but the film of itself is to me an embodiment of Halloween. I absolutely love that movie.
Oh, absolutely.
And I've got those figures. Diamond Select only did one wave.
Yeah, I've got the Karloff.
And I've got all three on my mantle right now.
Wait, so who did they do? They did Karloff.
They did the creature, or the Frankenstein creature, and they did Dracula.
I have the Karloff. And I'm not going to lie, as a kid, I forgot the girl's name. Who's the girl in
Francesca.
That?
Francesca.
I was like, Kim Novak had a mad crush on her as a kid.
I had a mad crush on that puppet, too. You're cutting out again.
I don't think there's... I said, I'd be honest, I still have a... And I think today it would be allowed.
You'll have to repeat that.
I'm giving you gold here. This is gold material.
Yeah, I mean, I can't hear it, though.
I blame you. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Yeah, it's really bad. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me? Yes.
Okay, so what I was saying was I would go out with Francesca even today if I could.
She's about 8 inches tall.
That's fine, and I don't think I'd be judged. No. I think that we're living in an enlightened time. I don't think anyone would look.
I was kind of upset that Diamond never did a second wave and gave us a Francesca.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. I probably never would have left the house though. so that's a fun one. And also, you know, I was never, and I know I'm feeding you this a bit because I know what you got to talk about one of your passions in life, but I have vague recollection of it running. I wouldn't really know it much unless I put in the DVD. The Groovy Ghoulies.
Oh, I love like, the Groovy Ghoulies.
There was a time there that Saturday, you know, that we had monsters for breakfast with our cereal. Monsters were kind of coming back on the weekends. They would run the monster movies. The 70s was big for you know, things like Horror Incorporated, you know, local late night horror things. And, you know, like it had happened obviously in the 50s and 60s, whatever. But the 70s, there was like this resurgence, I think, where.
Yeah, it came back big time in the mid 70s.
Well, you had like these, they were almost like superheroes and detectives and all that stuff. And they were kind of all over the place. But I love the look of the Groovy Ghoulies. I am not like a Groovy Ghoulies guy or fan or anything, but I love the design work of those characters.
I love their theme song. And I occasionally put on the, there was that great 90s Saturday morning cartoon album. Do you have this?
Yeah, with Matthew Sweet and Juliana Hatfield and all them.
Yeah, all my favorites in there. And the Ramones covering Spider-Man. I cannot for the life of me remember who covered the Groovy Ghoulies, but
I don't know. Was that on there? I know the Banana Splits was on there. Yeah. I don't remember the Groovy Ghoulies being on there.
It's Groovy Ghoulies. I who the heck did it?
I think it was called Saturday Morning or something.
Saturday morning, yeah, but yeah, I actually play that Groovy Ghoulies cover all the time.
The Matthew Sweet Scooby-Doo
is great. I think Juliana Hatfield does Josie and the Pussycats.
Yep, and then was it Tanya Donnelly and Supersonic or Semisonic do Banana Splits?
Yeah, I love that too. It's gonna just drive me nuts. Sponge does a beautiful Speed Racer, but I'm just stalling until I answer.
Somebody does Gigantor. Gigantor's on
I
there too.
I love that Gigantor.
But wait a second.
It's the Toadies.
Okay, because I was feeding you to get to one of your true loves.
Yeah, we're always going to end up at the Monster Squad. I don't know what is to be said about the Monster Squad. That I haven't said before, but it's definitely what imbued me with love of these characters. They're crime fighters. It's a goofy show. It's certainly not a big budgeted show, but you know, it aired for 1 year, and I swore I had dreamt it up until you know. And I drove guys nuts at cons. You know, like any episodes of Monster Squad, and they'd go, "What, that movie?" And I go, "Not that movie." You know, and most of them didn't know about it. One guy actually told me at a con, they don't exist anymore. They would have just wiped those tapes.
And really?
Yeah, he you know, idiot that he was. And he also told me there's no episodes of Shazam left. Only thing I can remember is I got a couple of things from my pal Mike Vraney at Something Weird Video, who sadly passed. He gave me a tape, and I remember he labeled it Saturday Morning Trash. And it had one episode of Shazam on it. I don't know if it had a Monster Squad, but I still have that tape because it was just so sarcastic. Because he was
funny.
A kid of the 60s.
He's like, I found it, now shut up.
Yeah.
God, leave me alone.
But I got the world's worst copy of Monster Squad finally, and I watched, I think, two episodes of it. And I never anticipated they'd ever put it on DVD, but they did.
Right?
And it sold out. Did you know that? Like,
I did not know. I was just going to ask because I want to track it down. But
well,
you know,
they reprinted it, and it's still sold out.
Now, we are living in such a golden age of everything.
Well, it's still available in the UK. If you have a region free player, just get it in the UK because
I do have a region free player.
It's got ridiculous out of print Amazon pricing. Although you can find it on.
On eBay
cheaper, but
it's like the the Filmation Flash Gordon series.
Yeah,
for the longest time, everything else by Filmation was getting a DVD release, and I kept thinking, "This is nobody cares about this show. It is never going to get released." And then about 12, 15, 13 years ago, whatever it was, they finally put it out.
Yeah,
and I was just Because I had
and
like
they
a
cleaned boot. It up too, didn't they?
They cleaned it up
because they didn't clean up Tarzan. I don't know if you noticed that.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's pretty rough.
It's pretty like I still liked it, but it's like oh, that's too bad, you know.
Yeah.
But
Monster no, look, Squad, the Tarzan looks like a bootleg. The
it,
official
it
release
does, it
like
does look like a bootleg. Monster, but you know we're kind of past. It's way too late, you know.
Yeah.
It should have came out in the 90s. The Monster Squad Blue DVD set's pretty nice. It's not super clean, but you get to watch, you know, good prints of the show. And mm-hmm. I'd forgotten how many amazing guest stars are on there. Sid Haig. One of the episodes drove me
Julie
crazy.
Newmar.
Pardon?
Julie Newmar, right?
Julie
isn't
Newmar
she in-
is the Super Witch.
Right.
And she's actually on some of the merchandise. And with the one that kills me is there's an episode, and I remember it as a kid, where this villain's going to turn them all into sausages, and it's this bad guy, and it was driving me crazy who this guy was.
Uh-oh.
And it's Pontius Pilate from Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it was Jonathan Harris, and I was like...
Oh, Jonathan Harris is in an episode.
Oh, no wonder he wanted to turn everyone into sausages.
Yeah,
Jonathan Harris.
And Marty Allen is a villain, your favorite comedian.
Marty Allen.
And
one half of the greatest comedy duo of all time.
And the mayor kills me because the mayor is, you'd know him from 16 Candles, you know, Dong, where is my automobile? He's Grandpa.
But okay.
I believe he's Francis's father in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, too.
Oh, Pee-wee, the Buxtons are not thieves.
That's it.
Buxton.
But definitely my love of Frankenstein stems from from Monster Squad, even though he's kind of a, he's a goofy interpretation.
He's a schmuck.
Yeah. And goofy interpretations, Herman Munster.
I was just going to say, as long as we're talking about comedy and television... The Munsters, I mean, was that as big a show? Because both those shows were, I mean, Addams Family and Munsters, I think, did pretty well. They had merchandise that came out. But it's not like they ran for 5 or 6 years.
No, they ran like 2 years each, didn't they?
Were those the kind of like the iron, they struck while the iron was hot, like Batman, and all of a sudden everyone went crazy for it, or the Monkees, everyone went crazy for that first season, and then by the time the second season came, they had already grown up and got onto something else? Was that kind of what
maybe. I mean, the monster fad, it's amazing, just to show you how big the monster fad was. I mean,
mm-hmm.
There were two network TV shows kind of based on it. And but you know, and it also hit that whole tone of they were goofing on these old movies. It was mm-hmm. schlock horror,
right?
I love the Munsters.
And actually, because I mentioned to you off air that I found a couple old star logs because I was just back in the Twin Cities for a visit at an old bookstore. They mention in the news section of Starlog that the Munster, that Halloween special, was about to air. And they fully expected it to be a new series. The color one that aired for that Halloween. Do you remember that?
I bought a copy of that. And I don't know if I bought it or if I don't. I don't know if you can buy it. But for the kids, I'd forgotten about it. I saw it as a kid and totally
right. So
forgot.
is it an hour special?
It's a
like
2-hour
a
movie. And
2 hours, and it's in color.
Yeah. And who the hell is in it? It's got, it's called The Munsters, Munsters Revenge, because there was a theatrical movie called Munster Go Home. You remember that, right, with Terry Thomas?
They recast Eddie, and
had to.
Yeah. Eddie could have been a teenager.
Was
you know,
Eddie getting, in it, even?
I think they recast it with Eddie. But it's funny because, and I know I'm not crazy, I have a very, very sharp recollection of that coming on television and me either just coming back from trick-or-treating because it got dark pretty early, you know, or just going out like my dad was going to take me around or something. So I think it was 1980 that thing was on, 79 or 81. Okay.
Do you remember that Bob Hastings is the Phantom of the Opera in it?
No.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was in it.
You know what? That blew my mind. Like when we rewatched, I was like, I don't remember him at all in this. But yeah, he's living with them, the Phantom of the Opera, and he keeps singing and breaking all their glass.
Speaking of Monster Squad, jumping around here as we do.
Okay.
Tom Noonan. T- Tom Noonan as the monster in Monster Squad, the movie.
Oh, the movie, yeah.
That's a good creature and a very cool. Tom Noonan's one of those creepy dudes. He's been in loads of stuff.
He was in that Last Action Hero.
He was, but I think most famously,
Manhunter.
He was in Manhunter. Yeah. He was Dockhide in Manhunter. And it's funny, like if you've ever seen Red Dragon, which is what the book is originally called, but Michael Mann called the movie Manhunter. That when they redid it with Hopkins and Ed Norton, Ralph Fiennes played him, and it just wasn't the same thing as Tom Noonan being this 6'5". Big, lanky, creepy-looking dude in Manhunter as Dollarhide, and my pal Brian Cox, by the way, playing Lecter.
I always thought he preferred Brian Cox as Lecter.
Oh, absolutely. Brian once said to me, he said, "I think the problem was I played him." Hopkins played him crazy, and I played him mad. I said, "Yeah, that's the difference."
It was subtle. It was very, very subtle.
Right, but he was great. That was a great creature design, I thought. Like Tom Noonan was a good choice.
Actually, I'll go on the record, okay? Because I always get into this when I publish anything on the site. Not that it's a fight or anything, but people get it confused with the movie.
Sure,
and you know, if your kid growing up in the 80s, you think that's the greatest movie ever. I think the character designs are amazing. I think the casting is very good. I can't like that movie. It's just too all over the place for me.
Oh, I like it. Yeah. I like it a lot. I do not have the affinity for it that some people.
Yeah, like I can't aggrandize it. It's just okay to me.
No, I like it. Yeah. I like the tone of it. I like the kids. I think it's weird in that you got a kid smoking and like some of the dialogue.
It's too grown up for kids and too kiddy for grown ups.
It doesn't quite know what it should be. But I also see what's his name in there? Who co-wrote the
Shane Black.
It's got Shane Black in there, and there's some sharp stuff. But the kids were really sharp and. You know, well, I thought, well,
I wanted it to be a hit, even in the 80s. I couldn't even see it in the theater because it came and went.
But, you know, I love how you've had to spend half your life saying Monster Squad. No, not that Monster Squad.
Not that
one. I've had to spend half my life saying how much I love Paul Weller from The Jam.
Peter Weller?
And people go, oh, RoboCop? And you go, no. It's Paul Weller. It's not the same guy. He's a British musician.
We should start wearing scarves and talk about our gramophones.
And wear buttons that say, I grok Spock.
Yeah. I grok Cybok.
Back to some monsters or Franken interpretations.
Franken people. Oh, pretty much done. No.
There was some stuff on – there was – okay. I might be wrong about this. Do you remember the show called Cliffhangers?
Loved it.
Was there a Frankenstein or a Dracula one in there?
Dracula.
Or was it just Dracula. Yeah. Okay, it was not Frankenstein. Okay, so you had the TV one with Sarazen and Seymour. The next, I think, regular version of the monster was just in Penny Dreadful, for which
– Oh, poor John Clare.
Biff Bang Pow made action figures for it and made an action figure of that monster.
Absolutely. But it was the best character on that show.
Oh, but it was heartbreaking. Yeah. I just couldn't, after a while.
Not that I want to spoil that show. If you haven't seen that show, seek it out. Although it is a dark ride. It is not the super terrific, happy fun hour.
And I'll say this. I know I've talked about it enough on the show, and I know people know the crushes that I have on people. If you like Timothy Dalton, he is not the lead in this by any means, but whenever he's on screen, you can't take your eye. And this is what always worked for him as Bond or when he played villains. Yeah. He get this look in his eye. One minute he can be this you know, society sort of gentleman that's very well refined, and the next moment he could rip your head off.
Yeah, he's kind of a bastard in this, and I love it.
He's a real bastard and a badass. Yeah, I mean, he does.
There's nobody bad in this.
And he's got a couple of scenes with Brian Cox. They've been friends for, 40 years, those two.
My favorite pinnacle scene of the series in the middle, and I don't want to give it away if you haven't seen it, but basically somebody does something very bad to the Frankenstein creature.
Yes, yes.
Who is called John Clare.
Yes.
And he gets his revenge. And I don't know about you, but I actually watched that twice.
Well, the thing is, I know, and you're watching it, and you're just waiting. Yeah. You're just waiting for that moment to come because you know it will, and it's actually quite quite gratifying.
Yeah.
So the thing is, what's interesting, I think, that we're getting to here with all this stuff that we're talking about, all these different incarnations and stuff. There have been a billion incarnations of Frankenstein, different versions. I want to say two things. A, there hasn't been a lot in the past, 20 years or so. They try to do it with Van Helsing, it was such a great idea on paper. It's such a great idea. It's kind of like destroy all monsters or something, and then proof that, boy, you get the wrong people involved for a decent idea, and it just poops the...
Oh, my God, did I have stuff. Such high hopes for that movie.
Oh, my God.
Do you remember the 1997 House of Frankenstein miniseries?
Ooh, help me out. Who was in that?
NBC did it. It starred... well, the biggest name I can remember is CCH Pounder.
Yeah?
And I think this is the guy I'm thinking of. Yes. Peter B. Crombie played Frankenstein, and you would know him best, the Frankenstein creature, as Crazy Joe DiVola from Seinfeld.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a modern take on it.
Really?
I cannot really remember.
Crazy Joe, I'm going to put the kibosh on you, Seinfeld.
Yeah, you know what? He did take me out of it. Because he's Crazy Joe DiVola, and this was like 1997. So, I watched it when it aired.
Speaking of the 90s, I'm going to throw one at you that I promise you've seen. Maybe not since then. Do you remember Frankenstein Unbound, the Roger Corman film?
I've seen that recently.
You did?
Oh yeah. I'm tempted to
spin it again because the cool thing is, not only is John Hurt, Raul Julia, plays Dr. Frankenstein. When they go back in time and he meets Mary Shelley and Byron and Shelley, it's Jason Patrick and Michael Hutchence of
Bridget Fonda.
And Bridget Fonda, right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, I forgot about that cast. I should go back. And I don't, it's not because it's low budget and it's like in the future and there's time travel and all that stuff. But
I was trying to think of the name of it and it was not coming to me, but I liked it better than the De Niro one at the time.
I can't remember what the monster looked like in it.
The monster's he's a bit overdone. You know, he's got long hair and the big face, and I think his eyes have different color in them. And I think at the end of it, doesn't John Hurt kill the monster with his car? Oh, no. They go into the future together. That's it.
Well, didn't he have a weird neck?
Yeah. He's a bit overdone. He's not my favorite design of the creature, but I can overlook that.
Yeah, okay. But I was on VHS when it came out because I was so anxious for a new monster movie.
I was excited about that. And I have a close friend who was, big on Frankenstein like I am, so we would rent anything that had the creature in it. So I've probably seen anything you throw at me, to be honest with you.
Well, there's another interesting one that was done by Ken Russell called Gothic.
That's the story of Mary Shelley.
Right. No, it's not about the monster, but it's an interesting sort of take because that made me think of, Unbound, where you actually go back and hear them having those conversations about that weekend and how she came up with the creature, whatever. In Gothic, it takes that to the nth degree that there were supernatural things going on that weekend and they're all in this house. And it's an interesting cast. There's some interesting faces. Gabriel Byrne is in it and Julian Sands and people
Julian Sands. I haven't thought of him in years.
Yeah, he's in it. That's kind of an interesting, just to get kind of the backstory. All right, let's shift just a little bit.
I just want to switch to that. You just put me – of Gods and Monsters.
That's
about James Whale.
Right, and there's a guy that plays Karloff in it.
It's a familiar guy too.
He's amazing. Such a great – but what do we see? Do we see Frasier as the monster at some point?
Frasier basically plays the monster, I think, in a fantasy-type sequence.
Right.
It's been a while. I do like that film, though.
Yes, it's actually a very good film. Let's shift gears just a bit, and we'll probably get back to a couple more titles if we can think of things that, you know, I'm sure we've forgotten. Favorite merchandise? You must have a ton of Frankenstein stuff.
I do.
What is some of your favorite pieces of Frankenstein merchandise?
Well, as a kid, I only had one Frankenstein action figure, and that was the Lincoln International Frankenstein. So that would be my top, you know, with a bullet Frankenstein toy.
Gotcha.
And I have two of those. I have one in the card and one in the box. And, you know, it always, anything I collect, it always starts with Frankenstein. And then it goes down the tiers, you know, especially if they're pricey items, you know. Then, you know, there's a few items I really love, like the AHI Frankenstein water pistol.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Mego Frankenstein doll. And, you know, the Aurora kit is amazing. I've owned like seven of those in my lifetime. And, you know, I always like bendies and jigglers and that sort
of thing. I love stuff when they go like water pistol route and they go those. I love that stuff. Like the little wind-ups, the little, you know, King Kong and Godzilla little chubby little wind-ups. I love that kind of stuff. Because that was a big deal. Monster toys and like – You know, monster rings, or there was a lot of that in our cereal boxes as prizes and stuff, and you know, all that monster stuff. Because I've told you this before, but for me, there are so, and I just got back from the Twin Cities. I was there for about a week, and I don't know where everyone lives, but I'm telling you, if you could ever visit the Twin Cities, you know, Minneapolis, St. Paul, go like the third week of October because it is absolutely gorgeous. The leaves are changing. There's a wind kicking up. It's Halloween everywhere. I mean, it truly is. Like when you go to Target here in L.A. So, you know, when you go to Target here in L.A., there's like two aisles of Halloween stuff, which is fine. I noticed when I'd go back to the Twin Cities, there's like four aisles of Halloween merchandise. And I think it has something to do with the fact that it's the last – kind of thing that everybody can come together on before the weather really starts to change and the snow kicks up and it gets really cold. And then people aren't doing a whole lot of outdoor stuff until, you know, March or April again. And it's very, you know, it's a seasonal thing. Like it just feels like Halloween there much more than it does here, which is weird because, you know, living in Los Angeles, it's like it's Halloween every day with the people walking around here. So you would think that it would be bigger, but there's just something about it there that's, and one of the places that, you know, whenever you'd come around the corner in a store and suddenly there's the Halloween stuff, I used to get so excited as a kid. And one of the places was Woolworth's.
Oh yeah.
And Woolworth's was in shopping malls. They had store and they were big stores. But I remember in the Maplewood
basement.
I don't remember the basement This was like a standalone when you on the second floor of the Maplewood Mall, and you came through the front door, and on the right side was all the Halloween stuff. And the moment you walked in the door, it just smelled like rubber masks and rubber toys, and that smell is so evocative to me. And it just there's like, you know, two big rows of just if you look at those two big rows of nothing but Halloween stuff, like those rubber masks to me as a kid were like, you know, going to Tiffany's for a bracelet or something.
Yeah, nothing smelled better than that. I bought my creature mask at Kresge when I was a kid. I saved up money to get a Black Lagoon mask.
And now, Kresge has special cards, right? The Mego cards, the Kresge cards?
Yeah, I never saw those as a kid, but it was SS Kresge & Co., and it was one of those places that had, you know, a basement and a lunch counter, and I just can remember digging through their bin of rubber masks and finding a Creech and being just so excited, and that smell that it's
right,
it's still with me. Yeah,
it's true. It's like there are certain things that are like, you know, you smell popcorn and you feel like you're at a movie theater. Yeah. And you do this, whatever, that's what that kind of smell does. Well, I'll tell you what, I don't have much stuff, I mean, as far as monster stuff goes, but I'll tell you what I do have, and I know it's fairly recent and common and everything, but
boo.
What's that?
I booed you for no good reason.
Well, they you know, Sideshow has always done those great, you know, 6-inch, you know, 7-inch action figures.
Yeah, they're
that
very
they make.
Nice.
And I think that now, is it Diamond that took those sculpts and started putting them in Toys R Us? And there's some that are at comic shops, etc.
I think Diamond did their own versions of them, actually.
Well, then maybe that's what I'm... I don't know what it is, but
tempted by those.
I've got the Wolfman. I've got Frankenstein from Son of Frankenstein. I've got Karloff as Dr. Jekyll, and actually the Hyde head as well from Abbott and Costello, Meet Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I've got Creature from the Black Lagoon. I've got the Mummy. But I'm telling you, the Wolfman and the Frankenstein, I just adore these figures because they're big, they're bulky, they're heavy. And, you know, I've always wanted to, like, put them in a case to have all the monsters together, but they're such fun to kind of handle. I know this sounds goofy, but you know what I mean? When you get, like, a weighty sort of sturdy action figure, you know, in your hand, like,
yeah.
It's just the posability and the detail on these is fantastic. And every Halloween, I get them out and put them on a shelf.
I really loved Diamond Selects with MC. They did 8-inch monsters, and they would do 2 every year. And they did a beautiful Glenn Strange Frankenstein, a Wolfman. They had to do a generic Dracula, which I actually kind of liked better because I, you know, it reminded me of being a kid. They did a Karloff Mummy. They ended it with the Metaluna Mutant in the series. You're off again.
Yes. Yeah. And I used to have that. Sideshow did a hard figure.
Yeah, they did.
So I love those figures, but also a couple of months ago at Son of Monster Palooza here, I came across a fun little toy line called, I think they're called Horror Hearses.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a die-cast car about 4 inches long, and it's got, you know, depending on the character you get, I think there was like a vampire, Frankenstein's monster, a skeleton, a mummy. Each one comes with a little, like, 2-inch-tall posable figure of a monster and a little red coffin, and you put the figure inside the coffin, the plastic coffin, slip it in the back of the hearse, and when you press down on the hood ornament, the coffin shoots out the back of the hearse.
Okay, I saw those on your Facebook feed, and I meant to ask you what they are.
Yeah, and this one, I've got one here. I've got the little Dracula loose, and then I've got the Frankenstein's monster. I've got the skeleton somewhere, still carded. But this one's called Monster Mania. It's got Frankenstein's monster on the hood, and it's die-cast metal, whatever. But the neat thing is I posted about it in on Facebook, and haunted. The cool thing is, so I posted a couple pictures on Facebook of this horror hearse with the little figures outside the car and raving about how cool this toy is. And Gene St. Jean, who's an old pal, who is one of the greatest toy sculptors alive, who actually sculpted the very first figures that Biff Bang Pow did of Flash Gordon and Ming and the Dude and Walter way back in 07. He comes out of the woodwork. He goes, "Oh my God, that was like my first sculpting assignment for a toy company."
Huh.
He sculpted the actual, you know, the big, you know, two ups of the figures before they got made into these little posable guys. And the little Frankenstein is really charming. He's wearing like a purple, kind of a purple suit with an orange shirt, and he's just about 2 inches tall. And he's, you know, green. His little head and arms and legs move, and I kind of have a crush on him. He's just kind of a cool little monster.
I was intrigued by those. When were they made? In the 90s?
Like 93, 92, 93, something like that.
Okay. That would have been when I kind of ignored toys.
Yeah, they're die-cast metal. And when you know, you get the little hood ornament is die-cast. You press on the ornament and the coffin shoots out across the room. It's just a weird idea for a toy. I don't even know who made them, but you know, they're a little pricey. I saw some online, and also we would kick ourselves if we did not mention our friends the Monster Cereals.
Oh, and yeah, how Frankenberry,
Boo Berry, Count Chocula, what was Yummy Mummy, which
yeah,
I never got.
We only got in Canada Boo Berry, Chocula, and. And Frankenberry. And Boo Berry went away when I was 6.
Oh, see, we got all those, and then we got Fruit Brute for a year. And then I don't remember Yummy Mummy, frankly, but I remember Fruit Brute. And the prizes were awesome. But the commercials were fantastic.
Oh, I remember the commercials, yeah.
Karloff and Peter Lorre and Lugosi sound-alikes.
Yeah.
All those characters. It's dynamite.
I wanted to mention too, what's the worst movie with Frankenstein you've ever seen? It like the Frankenstein monster.
Oh man. Well, one pops in mind right away, but why don't you go first?
Okay, it's actually one of my favorites to watch, but it's just terrible. It's called Frankenstein Island, and it stars John Carradine, and it is just an absolute ramble of a film. These guys end up on an island, and it's a mad scientist, and John Carradine. I think John Carradine's dead by this point, or he's just basically a hologram. The monster shows up, and then there's like a kung fu fight, and it's just this is the best description I can give you.
I think it's
made by Jerry Warren, who made things like Wild Wild World of the Batwoman. I believe it's early 80s, and it looks so dated. 1981.
Wow.
And it, God, Cameron Mitchell's in it. Oh, I forgot Cameron Mitchell's in this. Robert Clark.
Cameron Mitchell. You know what? I'm pretty sure
he's hammered.
Clearly he read the script. So
he's quoting Shakespeare. Or no, Edgar Allan Poe. That's right.
If I remember it correctly, Branagh's Mary Shelley's Frankenstein is an absolute abomination. But if I really had to pick, although it's not officially like a Frankenstein film, I got to go with Van Helsing. I mean, every single thing about that is so poorly judged, from the Igor character to the Dracula character to – I mean, it might as well be a camp, you know, musical. They might as well break out into song at some point. And – the Frankenstein, it's just awful. It's like a Nickelodeon version of a sitcom. You know those Nickelodeon sitcom things?
Yeah.
I don't mean the sitcoms. I mean like those ones that were like, you know, that it's trying to hit a certain age group and you're going, really? Even kids wouldn't. I could never understand what the Van Helsing thing was, where it's just, I don't know what they were, you know, any of those characters, how ridiculous they all were, and just like campy and silly.
They were all so cartoony.
Cartoony. That's the word.
They were just so hyper stylized and over the top. And I remember, I did not see the film on at the theater because I just read just such dreadful reviews. But I have a good friend who I respect very much, and he's in love with Kate Beckinsale, and he owns her entire body of work, and we watched it on DVD, and I really, you know, I always look for the Frankenstein character in the movie, but this guy with the lightning running through his head, it was so ridiculous.
Yeah, wasn't that it? Is that he's got like a clear skull or
it's
something?
It's so they all looked like action figures.
Yeah, or he looks like, yes, you know what? He looks like he's made of like he looks like the padding on him and everything. It looks like he's made of like marshmallow stuffing or something.
Yeah, and the Dracula looks like some sort of German goth synth musician.
Oh, just, yeah, just, yes. Like he came out of like Men Without Hats in like 87 or something.
Just everything has that terrible blockbuster-ness about it. Like the story itself was kind of a fun idea.
It's a great idea. It's such a great idea.
I was looking forward to it because I've had similar ideas as a kid, you know. But then when it came out, it was just the execution. And did you know that before that, the next project that Stephen Sommers was going to do would be Flash Gordon?
Yes, I did. Yes. It's amazing how many bullets we've dodged with Flash Gordon, and we're totally digressing.
Yeah.
But I say the same thing about Dune. It's ironic that both Dune and Flash Gordon were executive produced by Dino De Laurentiis. Both of them were blown off when they came out, for the most part, in America especially. And both are becoming the high watermark for those characters, and no one has been able to go after. I mean, they tried to do a couple of Dune miniseries on Sci-Fi Channel, you know, over a decade ago.
Yeah, but they didn't have the budget. Hey folks, just wanted to let you know that our episode expired early due to Well, let's say a lightning storm. Does that work for everybody? We had some technical issues, and it just drove us mental for about an hour. So we were unable to finish our Franken thoughts, but we did get a good show out there. However, we did not end with wishing you guys a happy Halloween. Thank you for listening. I know we didn't get two shows in October, but we will strive to get two in November. Also, I wanted to mention that we are in the latest issue of Famous Monsters Magazine as the podcast of the month. It is an incredible honor and accolade, and we got to thank David Weiner, who was the editor at the time. And we're really honored. I mean, that is, if you chose USA Today or Famous Monsters, I would prefer to be covered in Famous Monsters, to be perfectly honest, because those folks get it. So, with that being said, happy Halloween. Have a safe one, and we will talk to you very, very soon. Thank you again for listening. Thank you for hitting us up on the Facebook page and Twitter. We really appreciate it. It sometimes is a little tough to get two out in a month, but we really are trying, and this is a great joy. Thank you very much.